Hello, everybody. Welcome. I'm Della from The Beauty of Play. I am doing a sample webinar because my subscription enrollment for homeschooling and for math membership is now open. And I've invited Hannah with Pepper and Pine and Kimberly with Sunshine Rubies to join us today to talk about chemistry, because I've been watching and I'm seeing both of them are doing chemistry on their social media, and I am currently planning our block that we are going to do this summer, and so we're talking about the Waldorf chemistry block. I want to do a very short introduction. I'll send deeper introductions in the email that goes out with the replay, but Hannah has been homeschooling for quite a long time in the Waldorf style. Hannah in particular has been educated in a Waldorf school in her youth, and she has home educated 4 children, 3 of which are, well, one has graduated from college, 2 are in college, and then if she's homeschooling her last one, her daughter, who is my daughter's age. I have 2 children. My oldest is in college, and my youngest, we are finishing up homeschooling and is Hannah's daughter's age. And then Kimberly, very similar path, has been homeschooling for a while in the Waldorf fashion. She also has 4 children, 3 of which are in college, yes, Kimberly? And then she is at home finishing up with her youngest. And that is our introductions for today. So I'm going to start with you, Hannah, if that's okay. Will you tell us how you approached the chemistry block
in a Waldorf fashion? Thank you for the introduction. For everything that I'm sharing today, if you're interested in seeing like how we actually make our way through the demonstration and the lesson, I do have tutorial videos that showcase all of our chemistry up to this point. So the first thing I want to share is the two chemistry resources that I'm using, because I do have a lot of chemistry resources, but if you are looking to do this more in the Waldorf style, which is, in my opinion, quite different than a traditional approach or conventional approach rather, then one of these two resources might help you. And there are more out there, and I'm not sure if this is coming up that way, in a way that you can read it, or if it's the opposite.
Yes,
So this is the chemistry main lesson block by Live Education. It is quite short, but this is one resource that I'm using in order to plan our lessons. And the other resource that I'm using is Chemistry the Waldorf Way for grades 7 and 8. And this is a chunkier resource. It has a lot of demonstrations, but it does not have illustrations or the main lesson block approach. It has so much information, but it is not a curriculum necessarily that I feel is user-friendly for the homeschooler. If you are in a classroom, this might be a great resource to help you put together your demonstrations. And if you are a homeschooler and you have another resource to support this particular one, then I think it's a great resource to have. So the first thing is understanding the Waldorf approach to presenting a chemistry lesson. What's different about this, and you will find similarities when you're presenting a physics lesson as well, is that we are presenting the phenomena on the day that you're doing your demonstration. Then you're just packing up everything. You're not talking about it. You're not explaining anything. I think that the limited explanation might just be about the apparatus that you're using. The following day, this is where the learning really comes in, because the students have observed this phenomena. So for instance, let's take acids and bases, because that's quite dramatic compared to maybe some of the other things that we are observing. So we're using like an indicator to test whether a solution is an acid or a base. And you can see your indicator change colors. And that for me is like, oh, that's a wow moment. Okay. So we're doing that. There's no explanation. The following day, this is where the lesson really is brought back to the surface, or the experience rather is brought back to the surface, and the lesson takes place. This is where you review the entire lesson or the phenomenon that you did the previous day. And then you start to talk about what was actually happening. So you're talking about the science. So you're experiencing the phenomena first. You're going to sleep, like you're taking a day. And then the next day, you are bringing that back up. You're having the student relive that. And then we're going to lay down a little bit of understanding, a little bit of science to that. And then following that, you will then put your work into a main lesson book. Or in some cases, you could opt to use a student lab book. This one, for my kids, and only two of my kids have done a chemistry main lesson block, and one of them literally maybe only did a couple of lessons in the Waldorf style. So really, we haven't done as much chemistry as we've done other lessons, considering I have four kids and I'm homeschooling my last one. So the lab portion of it, if you want to write up an actual lab report, the chemistry main lesson block or the chemistry approach suggests that you don't need a lab report for every single demonstration. You might do one or two to experience what a lab report is like, and then the rest of it you can actually do it a little bit more like your traditional main lesson book entries, which would include some kind of narration or some kind of recap or an explanation of the science and then an illustration. I love including an illustration. I feel like with chemistry, it's kind of like you can or you don't have to. I've been trying to illustrate the apparatus, but I feel like it's not quite as necessary, but we still really, well, I should say, I still really enjoy including that. I feel like it just makes the main lesson book a little bit more interesting to review. And in the review process, and this is like, this might be like weeks or months or so long after the main lesson is completely done, the review process that I'm referring to when you're looking back at their main lesson books is that my children really love to look back, not just at theirs, but at their siblings' main lesson books. And it just sort of brings that learning back up to the surface. And hopefully it's a good experience. I really want my children to look back on their homeschooling experiences with fondness and with enjoyment and love, so that when they are looking at those books, it might not always be for information. It could also just be for nostalgia. But when it comes to information, having those illustrations and just looking at their work sometimes helps bring that information back up. Oh, I remember when I did that, or I remember that demonstration. And so that, in a nutshell, is how we would like to approach our demonstrations. In reality, I'll say this really quickly. In reality, what might happen is that it might take me 4 days to actually prepare the demonstration, because I'm looking through this book. I might be looking through my actual curriculum. I've made so many mistakes in this main lesson block. I'll be doing things and I'm like, oh, I missed something that was so important. All of my materials were supposed to be dried out. They weren't supposed to still be moist. No wonder I'm not getting the right results. Or why can't I burn wax? What is going on? Why is this so difficult? Why can't I ignite it? You know, what's going on? So these things, we obviously want to try to work them out before we're presenting the demonstration. And if you are in a classroom, then it's absolutely necessary that you do this three times. Three times is something that they say often in Waldorf education, if you're unfamiliar, that, you know, you want to make sure that you've tried it, it works, again, it works, again, it works, so that when you present it to the class, it works. Because in our homeschool, if it doesn't work, okay, we're just going to kind of troubleshoot it. It's fine. And that's a characteristic of our homeschool environment. But as my child has gotten older and she sees me preparing and reviewing ahead of time, to be honest, it actually makes her not trust me as much. Oh, you don't really know this. Oh, you have to look this up so often. And when they're little, they don't really see that process, or maybe they're not comprehending that process. But when I'm constantly having to go to the internet or go to one of my books to refer to information, I'm finding that actually complicates the lesson. It complicates in that she doesn't find me as an authority as she used to when she was younger. That is one problem, making sure the demonstrations actually function. That is another issue, making sure you have all of the materials. That can take some time. So in reality, it takes several days to present the demonstration or the phenomena. Then it takes several days to actually review it and put it into our main lesson book. So what should all be done in 1 to 2 to 3 days ends up taking us 1 to 2 to 3 weeks. Now, as a homeschooler, that's fine. We're doing other lessons in between. But in reality, the way that the main lesson block should function are that you're doing this all within 3 weeks. You're having like this concentrated experience working through all of this information, then putting it aside, working on something else, and then hopefully you can revisit it at another time. That is the ideal versus the reality of our homeschool.
Kim, do you want to talk about how you approached it, or do you want to wait? Because I'm happy to hop in, because Hannah already knows, but I have opinions about the book.
Yeah, I don't mind answering direct questions. Well, I'm by no means an authority here on...
Right. Well, but I think your experience is valuable. And at some point during this conversation, I want us to talk about the book that you saw Hannah used and how it changed your homeschooling
greatly. I can see that, I guess. So I had this book. I don't know if Hannah remembers, but years ago, Hannah, years ago, you had posted this book. It was in one of your big photo spreads of different books. It's The Private Eye. I'm a homeschool mom, and my husband works at home, and we've got a full house with kids home from college on summer break. So it's just wild here. Anyway, I'll try to be quick. This book was really influential, and I so appreciate, Hannah, you sharing your resources. This book really spoke about observation, detailed observation, deep and in-depth observation with reverence and with joy and wonder. And that really inspired all of the things that I do in our homeschool, to just really observe and observe myself, observe my children, observe what we're doing, to hold things in wonder and in reverence, and to use that as the starting place. And then to use everything as a springboard for creativity, for whether that's writing. This is actually a really nice curriculum guide for creative writing and scientific writing, but it was just such a platform for everything that we've done, whether it's creative drawing. This is also an art book. It's everything to me. It encapsulates everything that I kind of love: artistic, scientific, the humanity of things, you know. So thank you for that. Our homeschool is completely just wild and unorganized and chaotic. I think we basically live in an ongoing chemistry experiment in our home. And, you know, we just make up stuff as we go along. I am in no way any authority. I'm learning right along with my kids. I had a very mainstream education with over 17 different schools because I was a military family, lots of traveling. So I just don't have that same approach in me. I'm not very organized and I'm not methodical. And I'm the first to say, I don't know and I wonder. And because of that, my kids have developed very strong research skills. They're curious. They also wonder. They see me as a faulted human that I am. And I think that that's important too, because they tend to be on the lines of perfectionism. And so that they can see, well, I don't know everything and I'm doing okay. So I'm going to be okay too, basically.
I want to, at some point, I want to talk about the projects that you chose to do for chemistry, because they were really interesting. And I also loved your main lesson pages that I don't have a picture for, but when I send the email out for the replay, I'll send links to everything so that you guys can see what we're talking about. And I'm going to jump in. So we are also using this, and actually Hannah had an extra copy that she sent to me, which I'm so glad, because that saved me a little bit of money. And if you don't know this, I don't know if it's Waldorf in general, or probably, well, Waldorf is not a curricula, but in Waldorf schools, it's probably how it's mostly done, but it's definitely guided through the four, like, ancient Greek elements: air, water, fire, and earth. And then he talks about a more subtle travel through botany in photosynthesis, but I didn't catch that as well. He starts with combustion and then moves into gases and then earth. And in earth, he's talking about acids and bases and salts. That is seventh grade. And then it goes on, eighth grade is generally organic chemistry. So it goes over sugars, starches, fats, and carbohydrates, but all carbon-based molecules. We are doing probably mostly a seventh grade block, even though she's in eighth grade. And we're not starting with combustion. And this is the opinion that I was talking about. Combustion, definitely something that grabs the attention. It's very a woo moment, but I feel like combustion is also a very complex chemical process, and it is harder to understand than some of the other processes that we already know. So we're actually starting with water first. I've already started planning, and I'm using this. I agree with what Hannah says, that this is probably great for a classroom It's definitely great for a Waldorf classroom. As a homeschooler, you have a little bit more flexibility. And then also, I don't know if you can be purist. Hannah and I have talked about this before, because Waldorf is a pedagogy. It's not a curricula, but I don't generally stick to everything that you usually see in a Waldorf school. So we won't be doing all of the experiments or demonstrations in here, and we've altered it a bit. And I just do want to point out also how much I love, this is the reason that I am inspired so much by Waldorf. In all of the things that Hannah was talking about, like in threes, putting it to sleep, it's called recapitulation, is that the first day you do the demonstration, the second day you do recapitulation, where they're reimagining everything that you did in the previous day, and then you're discussing that and coming up with conclusions. And then the following day, you're then doing the main lesson book, which is narration and illustration. And sometimes I separate the two of those depending on what we're doing. Not as much as we get older, but definitely in the beginning. So that is both memory recall and spacing, which memory recall is like, in the science of learning, is the biggest tool for learning. Like, that is the largest term for long-term learning. And then spacing also is a tool for learning. Like, we know when things are layered on top of each other that we learn better if it's spaced out. So Waldorf does talk about like intentional forgetting and putting things to bed and so forth. So that's really interesting. Hannah, what did you think about the combustion aspect, like them starting with combustion? I know that's really typical. And Kimberly also, I noticed that, well, it didn't seem to me that you guys started with combustion. So what are your thoughts?
I want to weigh in on something that I've learned recently when it comes to purist or not purist in the Waldorf sense. And what I've learned is that as a homeschooler, in a way, we can be even more pure to the pedagogy than someone in a classroom, because we really go with the intuition at the moment. Like, what does my student really need in this moment? What are my inspirations in this moment? And a lot of homeschoolers may not have access to a Waldorf curriculum, because technically there really shouldn't be a Waldorf curriculum. A teacher should have absolute freedom in the classroom or in the homeschool space to generate those lessons. Yes, there's an overarching, like, what kind of lessons are we teaching in the years, considering the development. So in a way, we sort of have like this really beautiful opportunity, like exactly what you're doing is starting with water, which I would not even have considered doing that, because both the curriculum for live education and the Chemistry of the Waldorf Way both start with combustion. So there may be something that I'm missing as to why both of them have started with combustion, or it may be like, well, this is just a dramatic entrance to chemistry. There is one thing that I wanted to point out when it comes to the recall, the following, and explaining like what the student has observed with the phenomenon or for the demonstration. One thing that I noticed that was really, that I was getting maybe frustrated about, that I was needing my daughter to explain a little bit more, was the accuracy and the precision and the attention to detail in her narration or in her writing of when we did a couple of actual lab reports. She had just kind of done more of a narrative, and I'm like, no, your procedures have to be exact. Your materials have to be exact. You can't be like, we poured water into something. Like, no, like, how much water did you pour in? Into what? Was it a beaker? Was it a flask? And in your procedure, you have to, like, are you wearing gloves? Do you have your safety goggles on? You have to write every single thing down so that someone can recreate this, almost like a recipe, right? If you're baking, you have to know, it's not just flour and water. How much flour? How much water? Those kinds of things. And I noticed that was more challenging, and I was less patient with that. And I was, my degree is in chemistry, and regardless of my degree, I still need more curriculum for this main lesson block than I would for like history, for instance. I feel like there's more flexibility in some of the other main lesson blocks. And for this, I was so like, annoyingly specific. Like, it has to be this way. Then I'm like, okay, does it have to be this way? Like, where is this coming from? Like, no, this is a very different experience from any other main lesson block. This has to be, we really have to work on our accuracy, precision, and our detailed articulation of what happened. Almost to like a mathematical level. We're not like, well, you know, 46 plus 78 is like roughly 100. No, like, you need to know exactly. This is not a time to be kind of general with your answers. So having not worked into, we're still like combustion and acids and bases, and we're taking this ridiculously slow and in part. And I actually really love that you started with water, actually, Della, because my daughter is incredibly resistant to the combustion parts, very afraid, was, you know, 10 feet away and would not come in and watch, would not even light a match. I was getting like frustrated because like, this is taking a week to do one demonstration, even though I'm finally prepared. You're being afraid of it is really complicating this, and we have to kind of move through that. Now, to be fair, I was the worst chemist in school as well. I was afraid all the time. I didn't like gases popping in front of me because they were flammable and combustible. I hated it so much. So I have compassion for her fear. And also at the same time, like, it's safe. Like, I'm doing it for you first. It's safe. I just need you literally to be okay with lighting a match. So we spent weeks just getting, not even comfortable, just getting over the fact that finally she lit a match and she got through that and she won't do it again. So I kind of wish I had more forethought or experience to do what you did, Della, and start with something. And I don't know what the demonstrations are, but I'm assuming they're not popping in your face and lighting things on fire. And it probably would have been a better introduction to chemistry for my daughter.
Well, I'm using this, but the American Chemical Society also has like a middle school curricula. So I am pulling a lot from there because I wanted to cover, water is so huge in chemistry, and I wanted to cover various things that aren't covered that I could see in here. I also want to mention for this right here, in case other people are going to use it, this has no chemistry background. And I happen to know that Hannah majored in chemistry and I minored in chemistry. So we're pulling a lot from what we already know. And then I'm pulling from a lot of other books. Also, this is from the American Chemical Society. I had that printed. I'm also pulling from Chemistry Made Simple. I really like this one. I think we're going to be reading some chapters out of that. And that also is an area where we are diverging a little bit from chemistry, because like Hannah talked about, I think this also is a time where we need to be more thorough in our narrations and more explicit and precise in what we're doing. This is the time to start teaching the beginnings of scientific writing, which is different than other types of writing. It has a different set of rules, but particularly with lab reports, they are precise, they're third person, and it goes over a specific formula. You talk about methods and materials used, and then procedure. There's sometimes you have background knowledge before that, and then you go through and find your conclusions at the end. But yes, so the reason that I decided to go with water first was, like, I think what he talks about in the book, that they start with fire because it's so elemental, it's so necessary to life. But one could say the same thing about water. And water is so huge in everything that we do. And also another aspect of Waldorf is to go from the whole to the part and to touch on hand, heart, and mind. And I want to talk about that too, because I think both of you guys do a really good job in that. I want to talk about your main lesson pages, Kimberly, and your demonstrations and experiments. And Hannah, the art, your watercolor was beautiful. In fact, I'm going to use color dynamics and go through and make sure that we do at least one wet on wet for every of the Greek elements, air, fire, earth, and and water. Yeah, anyway, that's why I started with water, because I think it's a simpler, more foundational aspect. And because also I think to understand combustion, you have to understand like some basic, it's a more complex portion of chemistry. And I mean, everything is layered, but I wanted to have some other aspects covered before we hit that. So Kimberly, talk to us about how you chose your activities and how you guys went about doing them.
Okay, well, I don't know if everybody knows about the Waldorf Teacher Resources website.
Send them to me and I will put that in the email that goes out to everybody.
Okay. If you go to that website, you'll be able to click the side menu bar and then you'll be able to select the grades. I don't know if you can see that.
You can kind of see it.
Yeah. So at WaldorfTeachersResources.com, you can go there and they have like a drop-down menu bar for the grades, and then they'll have a subject to select from, and you can select chemistry, physics, you know, anatomy, etc. And they'll have a layout of like a scaffolding, like a lesson plan, basically, of these are the things. And then there's some inspiration pieces, main lesson images to look at, things like that, some resources. So I kind of started our homeschool years ago with that as a scaffolding for me, because I didn't study chemistry. I have no education in science at all. I studied psychology, and so I wanted to solve social problems. So you know, my experience in education was more in that realm, but I think I'm a chemist at heart. So I used that scaffolding to kind of build on. And then because I'm teaching my youngest son, and he's different than the other kids, you know, he's a different person, and I had to reach him. And for all these years, he's been the principal assistant. So I don't know if your younger children were principal assistants to the other students. So he's gone through Michael Faraday's Chemical History of a Candle 3 times. So he's done these experiments. He's been the one to help hold the stuff. He's been the counter of things, the gatherer of equipment. So, you know, so he's been primed already with all of these other experiments and things that are kind of more traditional in the Waldorf curriculum. And so when it came to him, you know, he's like, Mom, we already lit the candle. You know, we already burned stuff. We've already done these things. I know that already. I want to learn more. And he's also from a different era. What is that?
Right.
He's some generation alpha or something. And I'm an old mom. He's from this different world of information and a different way of thinking. So I decided that I needed a little bit of different information. Luckily, because he's my last kid, I got a little bit more spare time, and I decided that I wanted to read again. It's a pleasure to be able to read something. And so I got this book, Soap and Soul by Lisa Bronner. I'm very inspired by Dr. Bronner's story. I don't know if you know about his story, but look it up. Do you know about the soap, Dr. Bronner's soap?
Yes.
Hannah, do you know about, he's got the all one label. Love it. You could get it online. It's his manifesto in larger print. It's just a beautiful philosophy. And so I was very attracted to this book because Lisa teaches all about soap, and it starts with water. So we started with water. And we started with wonderful experiments that led to natural home cleaning products, which I love a clean home and I like natural products. So this was really just a fabulous blend of getting a clean home while learning some chemistry and doing it in a little bit of a different way than what we had done. And so our first several lessons were kind of inspired by Lisa Bronner's book. She's got a great website. It's like Green It Yourself website, where she teaches people how to do natural cleaning and have less harm on our environment. So I really appreciate that. And then, you know, because we're doing seventh grade and in the Waldorf, you know, outline, seventh grade is like the age of discovery and explorations and stuff, which in the past has been just a basic big heartbreak for me. Like, it's so heartbreaking to learn about a lot of the subjects and things of that time. And it's painful to bring a lot of that information to my child, information about slavery, information about taking over other people's cultures and land and the things that are very hurtful to me. And so I want to avoid those subjects, but because I want to be responsible, I also want to expose my children in an appropriate way. And so I fell in love with this book. Do you know this book? Napoleon's Buttons.
I love this book.
This book's great. Oh my gosh. And the reason I love this book, Hannah, I think you'll like this book because this is a book that's actually written by chemists, real chemists. This lady Penny, she's like a real chemistry lady, like super, super smart.
I'm writing down the title right now. I'm going to add it to my wish list. Thank you.
Oh my gosh, it's so fun. But it blends this age of exploration. It talks about the age of exploration and all the different chemicals, all the different things that kind of got us to where we are now. So it was a perfect blend for me to blend both subjects. And so it also brought a very human dynamic to the chemistry. And along the way, as tribute, we made like some tribute pieces for our art. Our art became a tribute to the people of long ago that we owe so much to, people that suffered and people that had their own genius, you know. So I think this has been one of our most influential books of the year. I highly recommend it. I love it so much. It's so well written. A couple of the sections are very heavy in chemical formulas, so we read it anyway. We didn't always understand it, but I think that it's like priming. I think, Della, you've talked about priming before, where you introduce them to this concept and then it sleeps for a very long time. And then somewhere in their like junior year chemistry course in the university, they're like, I remember something like that. And then it's not such a scary, overwhelming concept. It's something that relates back to dyeing fabric with black beans, you see? So it becomes more familiar, more accessible, more attainable, you know? So we just read the hard stuff anyway, and we pretend that we kind of understand it, and then we just keep going to the parts that are more relatable. So there are definitely some parts that people might not appreciate if you're not like a serious chemistry person. So everything we did followed step by step. I read to my son. We love reading to our children. Even the kids that come home from college, they love story time at night. I love it when they sit next to me, you know, and we kind of cuddle and we have story time. And then from the stories, we become inspired and we question. That's back to that foundation of the book. We ask, I wonder, I don't know. And there's everything based from the I wonders and the I don't know. We begin our research, or something pops into our mind like, oh, let's do this project now. And so the things really evolve organically from being inspired by other people's gifts. Basically, this lady's outstanding.
Well, I really enjoyed your fabric dyeing as part of your chemistry, because I think it's perfect for acid and base work. Because
it really is.
There's much chemistry in fabric dyeing naturally. And it's just,
it's perfect for this level. I was always afraid of dyeing with natural things because of mordants. That was like a scary thing. I didn't want anything toxic near my babies, you know? So I would hear these things like alum or iron acetate, and I'm like, ooh, rust, run away, danger, you know? And I didn't want to expose my children to things that I thought would be harmful to them. And then we learned how to make homemade iron acetate. And through that process of ebonizing wood and learning about covalent bonds and electron transfers and all this like fun chemistry stuff, through that process, we were like, wow, we're painting bamboo and look how pretty the fabric is now. wow, I think this is an eco print, you know? And then I'm like, I wonder what else we can do. And then we just start learning about homemade iron acetate as mordants. And it just led into wanting to make a tribute piece to the people. In this book, it talks about the ancient people that would make purple dye from murex snails. You know, so they talk about that in this book. And then we learn about this young teenager that loved chemistry, and he wanted to make a cure for malaria. And everybody thought he was weird and outlandish. And he ended up inventing the dye mauve. It was like the first synthetic dye. And so we wanted to make some kind of tribute piece for the people during that time. And then I'm like, I think I heard of people using black beans, and that's kind of purple, and we can use our iron acetate, so let's do it. And so that's kind of how things like that just evolve. And it's so fun. It's so fabulous. But a disclaimer, we did try to use butterfly pea flowers. You can get them dried, and it's not a good dye for making stuff permanent. It made like a light khaki color. So you might use it to experiment with that color shifting, changing the pH, you know, using baking soda and vinegar basically to shift the pH, which causes these color changes, but then it doesn't stay in the fabric very well. It does turn, like I said, to a khaki color. So it's a wow until you wash it.
Yeah.
And then it's a
If you're looking for things that dye really well, onion skins, the different yes. colors, red and yellow, will dye different colors, but they both have tannins in them, so they dye really well. And then also mm-hmm. turmeric is fabulous yes. dye. And then alters, all of them will alter with pH, yes. which is
the
really
turmeric
interesting.
Was fun. We used turmeric this year, and we made our own gold paper, like a colored paper. We dip it in the turmeric, dried out the paper, and then we used electricity.
I saw that.
Yeah, like you use a little battery. We got our little wires together. I was so proud of us because, like, I had to get equipment, things I didn't have. And, you know, and I'm always like, quick, where can we find this stuff? We need it tomorrow. It's an emergency. And so, Hannah, I'm so different from you. I'm sorry. I don't mean any disrespect. Okay. You're one of my role models. I appreciate all your differences from me with planning and all of these things. I just don't have it in me. And so anyway, we use the battery and the alligator clips, and we're like, it's sizzling. And then and because of the pH shift, because of the acid actually, you know, from the battery, it creates this beautiful line drawing. And I think we're doing something Renaissance-y at the time. So I'm like, let's do Mona Lisa, you know? So that's kind of how it happens for me. I think there's this one. You probably have something like this.
I don't have that one, but I okay. have their illustrated math books, and I think they're fabulous.
Yeah, this one's fun. My daughter just took biology 1 at the local college, and the first 3 chapters was the organic biology curriculum, step by step, page by page. And
wow.
Yeah, that was good to know, because she made it through unit 1 and unit 2 just from using this book in her college coursework. And we love, my daughter is the artist of the family. She's very visual. Hannah, you mentioned that your children enjoy seeing everybody else's main lesson books. It's a nostalgic feeling. All of my kids never want to look at her books because they're so good. They're like so beautifully appealing. And my son's like, why do I want to look at her books? I just feel like a failure because he's not artistic. He has other gifts. He's got other ways of processing. Stella, you know, he's the child that had the head injury.
Right.
And so when he was little, he lost his ability to use his hands and writing, and everything had to be relearned for that kid. And he's just artistic differently. So when I go, let's look at Anna's books, he's like, you know, he doesn't like it. But this book's very visually appealing. And so if you, for example, I'm not that creative with images sometimes. So I can like take something from here as an inspiration piece and then use it in my notebooking. One of the fun things about her biology class this year was they're doing a lot of notebooking at the college level, which is basically like it's like Waldorf main lesson pages. So, and she got graded. She had to turn in her notebook pages, and she had to use color and diagrams and drawings. It was so perfect for
I
her.
Think that that's great, because that's one of the things that they're learning through the science of learning. And I don't know, in the medical field, I have heard several times over, like, it takes roughly 10 to 15 years for the medical research to make it into practice, which is like astounding to think. I mean, I get why that happens, but it's just astounding to think about. And I think there is, you know, a gap in the research that they're learning with the science of learning and then it being placed into practice. But it's one of the things that I really love about a lot of different pedagogy, like Waldorf pedagogy, Charlotte Mason, Montessori. I'm sure there are others, but they have loads of those aspects from the science of learning built into their pedagogy. And one of them is the narration and the illustration, which uses memory recall, spacing, if you're spacing it out, and dual coding, which is like using symbols and pictures in addition to the words to have a deeper understanding and processing of the learning.
I think they're just those, these types of systems are very, they're teaching human. They're very human. They're very human oriented. They're very people oriented. They're mind, body, and spirit. They're head, heart, and hands. It's like, it's, you know, all of it. And I think that that's why they're so effective for so many people, because there are different styles of learning. There's so many different ways of processing information and understanding information. Our kids just happen to be super auditory. I'm not. And they happen to be very visual. So they love to be read to, and then they want to draw a picture. Except my little son, he wants to build something. He's the engineer.
Yeah, that works. So, it's yeah, still with like, your hands. Like, that still works.
Yes, it's still art.
One of the things that I want to talk about, this super simple chemistry, I think, Hannah, I've seen you use it too. It's not my favorite. None of them are my favorite for reading and understanding material. I think there is other material that describes various concepts better, but it has a lot of pictures. Some demonstrations, I found that the demonstrations in the biology one were lacking enough information to replicate them easily. Like, I could eventually replicate them, but it was because I had the biology knowledge. And so, but the thing that I do love about this book is it has lots of charts and graphs, which is something that you need at the middle school level. You need to be studying those charts and graphs and understanding. The one in particular that I was thinking of, I don't know if I can find it, was the one where it was talking about the energy level needed for exothermic and endothermic reactions. And it has a graph for both of those. And you can clearly see like the ending energy requirements higher on one and less on the other. Taking a look at those graphs and starting to really cultivate the critical thinking skills is really important for the middle school level. And so I really enjoy that aspect of this book, but not, I mean, I think there are better books out there that give clear explanation and more thorough explanation to chemical processes. But for the graphs and illustrations, it's really a useful book.
Yeah, I was going to say that, like what you said, the visual is so important because, as you said, we're needing not just the recall, we're needing like the writing, the illustration. And then here also, there's only so much I can do to present a lesson. Sometimes I do need to resort to looking at a graph or looking at an illustration so that I can convey it, because I've already made the picture in my mind. I've either already experienced it or I've already researched it ahead of time. Now I'm trying to convey it to my child. And this is something where it's very difficult to draw on previous experience. If I'm telling you about a book that I read, people have read books, so they understand. I tell you about a character or a color. We know this. But if I'm telling you about a reaction, what's a reaction? What do you mean it needs energy? What do you mean it's going to produce energy? Like, all of this, I feel, even though they might have experienced in some capacity, they've cooked, but we're not using the scientific terminology. I'm not coming in and saying, there's a reaction going on when I'm baking. I'm not using that terminology the same way I would be using mathematical terminology far in advance of presenting a lesson in math. And this is my own shortcoming. Like, maybe I should have talked about or shared chemical terms, chemistry terms, long before we actually did chemistry, so that there could be like a callback to what my child had experienced. The same way, Kim, like, your chemistry sounds amazing. I wish I could be a student, because doing all of that fabric dyeing, like, it just, why didn't I make that connection? Like, that's brilliant, because that's experiential in a way that I think is also beautiful, and it's scientific, it's chemical, and it's a way that the students probably have already experienced that kind of chemistry, because fabric dyeing is something that's woven into a lot of the Waldorf curriculum. So it makes absolute perfect sense to include that and then take it to the next level and say, well, you know, here's the chemistry behind it, or here's what's going to happen if we're going to use an acid or a base with this kind of chemical dye. Here's what happens if you don't use a mordant. Like, why do we need that? Or here's what happens when you use a plant dye with an animal fiber versus a plant dye with a plant fiber, because it's not going to work. Why doesn't it work? Why are those like negative to negative not working versus negative to positive when it comes to using an animal material with a plant dye? So all of those things, like, it's brilliant. Like, I've learned so much from listening to both of you, using water as like the beginning versus combustion and using plant, like, that's so brilliant. I love it so much. So
I feel like you did the same thing, Hannah, with your paper. In fact, I'm planning on copying that with the conservation of matter in your paper making. I thought, I was like, oh, that is so brilliant. To take paper, add it with water, then you have a mixture. It's an illustration of a mixture that you can separate out that mixture, and you can both weigh before and after and see that you have a conservation of matter. I'm planning on using that as both, like, it's illustration of a physical change, it's illustration of a mixture, it's illustration of conservation of matter. It's just a really good demonstration.
I'm so glad that you like that one. That was sort of an afterthought, and at the same time, my daughter had more fun just in the experience of making the paper without really connecting it to the science, which is completely fine. Like, I feel like the more experiences they have now, because in general, I don't think that they're going to have this kind of experiential education moving on. Maybe they would. Maybe in a lab there's way more than I'm expecting, but I'm hoping that all of these experiences now, one, they remember it and they can connect it to their learning later. But I wanna circle back to what you said, Della, about the resources, because I have been having a frustrating time with my resources, my chemistry resources that I'm not using for my daughter, but I'm actually using for myself to prepare my lessons if I need background information. And I'm kind of not real pleased with most of them. And granted, I haven't gone through all of them cover to cover, but for the most part, my issue is that I don't think there's enough content to explain what is happening on a chemical level. And the explanations are so shallow that if I need more, and I'm assuming my student needs more too. So I love using student resources versus resources that would be like college level or adult level, because I'm like, okay, I kind of don't need that. I need a refresher, and I need it to be super basic so that I can communicate in basic terms with my student. And so far, I haven't been pleased with any of them. So I'm really excited about Napoleon's Buttons. I think that's the title. I really want to look into that.
Oh, okay, there's another one.
Phases of Matter.
The American Academy, and it's really interesting because I actually purchased this one, and I started reading it and realized, like, this is almost college level. Like, it's between high school and college, and I was like, that's not going to work. Because she does want a good deal of independent work. I mean, I know not everybody does, but she wants it. But the American Chemical Society does middleschoolchemistry.com, and they have reading. And it's like, I like this one a lot. Like, I'm hoping we'll do the most of this. I had it printed from hard copy. And then we're using this. I think we'll probably read it. We'll see how it goes. I would say, you know, she's eighth grade, and really she's coming up on the first year of high school. And I think that this is more of a high school level, but yeah, we're gonna read that. It's not as fun as Napoleon's Buttons, though. We're going to read Aristotle Leads the Way. Joy Hakim has a three-book series on the story of science, but she doesn't cover biology. It covers chemistry, physics, and astrology. And those are really nice books. We're a little late, so it's going to be a little below her reading level, but she does find them engaging and interesting, and it'll go over a lot of what we're going over in chemistry. So that's another really good series. The first one is Aristotle Leads the Way, and it's Joy Hakim, and I don't remember the other two books, but I hope to get to them because they're really good books.
Della?
Yes.
Daughter is the same age as mine, and this is my first time introducing chemistry for my daughter, and I know that next year, technically high school, but for us it feels still like an eighth grade experience. So I definitely want to continue with chemistry with another block next year. And honestly, our blocks this year have not been traditional blocks. I've had more than one main lesson, which is not typical, spread out for months, which is also not typical. And so I definitely want to revisit this again next year. Do you plan to do that again with your daughter as well?
I am hoping, we'll see how it goes. I am looking at OER's Big History, which is interdisciplinary. So it covers astrology, some physics, some chemistry, and then it's supposed to move into history, but I don't know if we'll actually move into history. So maybe I don't have that planned out. Yeah, I'm not sure. But you definitely are doing another chemistry block.
I feel like since we didn't do what I expected to get done this year, and also for next year, I'm thinking of trying something new, and I am considering doing the high school online courses with Earth Schooling, I think. And I just saw an email recently. I'm like, you know what? I might explore that. And if I do that, then I feel like it will give, hopefully, I haven't looked into it enough to commit yet, but I'm hoping that it will give me enough space to do some of the main lesson blocks that we haven't gotten to that I want to do, or some of the lessons that I don't think would be offered elsewhere. There's still some history that I wanted to cover with my daughter. So hopefully if I'm doing that, we can still do some of the main lesson blocks that I want. It's also a year to prepare for an exit exam for, you know, my students tend to exit high school anywhere between the beginning of 10th grade to the end of 10th grade, thereabouts. So and my daughter's different than my son's. So there's a lot to, I feel like I'm embarking brand new, and sometimes your previous experience isn't necessarily an asset. It can kind of not be an asset. You can think like, oh, things are going to go the same, or we're going to follow the same path, but each child is different and unique and has different motivations and goals. And so I think I might be doing things different, than things that are unexpected to me. So yes, I definitely want to do another chemistry block. I feel like I did not do it service this year. And I love what you both are doing. So a little bit of FOMO. I want to do what you're doing. And I'm really hoping that all of the resources that you shared during this webinar are going to be available, because I think I'm going to have a little bit of a homeschool haul in chemistry again.
Yeah, I'm going to send it out with the email. So if you guys send me what you talked about, and I'll have to do some editing on the video. So hopefully I will see some of the materials. But if you send them, and if you have affiliate links, I'm not using affiliate links anymore for supplies, but if you do, I will add those in. Like if you'll give them to me, I'll put that in the email as well for your materials. But we'll just share all of our materials in that email, along with your bios and where people can find you, your email addresses, or, you know, websites, YouTube, Patreon, and so forth.
Well, can I say one more thing? It's very important to me,
yes.
Both of you. I really appreciate sharing of the resources, and it would really be a shame to end the conversation or leave thinking like, oh, I'm not doing that, so therefore I'm not doing well. I think comparison is really hurtful in so many ways. And I think that it's important to just be able to share your passion without hurting others, without making other people feel less than or bad about what they're doing, because each of us has our own background. We have our own story. We have things going on in our lives. We're so similar in so many ways because we're human and we share same values and ethics and reverence for life and for people. So it's really, really important that each of you, including myself, we go away feeling like I'm okay and what I'm doing is good for my children because I love them
right.
And I care about them and I'm doing my best. I see excellence in both of you. That's why I've been following you for years. I mean, it's strange. I feel like I know you when I don't really because I watch your life unfold in these small squares on Instagram. And I highly respect both of you. So please don't go away with any feeling if I'm not doing well, because that would make me very sad. And I just really, again, appreciate you sharing your resources, because I think that when we share our resources, then other people have the opportunity to maybe buy something used or wherever they get it, and they're able to take that and to take that information and then express it in their own authentic way that is relatable to their own children and to their own peer group and friends. And so thank you. Please don't feel judgment in a way that is harmful.
That was a big virtual hug. That was beautiful.
Everybody's homeschooling is different, so everything's going to look different. And we're kind of talking about the ideal. I think Hannah and I both tend to do that. But both of us, we have all kinds of projects left undone or that we don't get to. Or I was talking to Kim earlier when we were testing the platform, and she was talking about the organization. I'll get in the middle of a block and I'm like, oh, I missed like crucial information. I got to go find that. We've got to go on this side trail for a while and then we'll maybe come back. But I have learned myself enough to know that I tend to overplan. So even though we have 5 weeks, I'm planning for 4 weeks as if we only have 4 weeks. And that gives me extra time to catch up on things. But in all likelihood, I might not get to it. And then the other thing that I think is important is that we tend to feel guilt or judge ourselves for not getting to something. Like we were doing the symmetry work for geometry. So we our seventh grade geometry got done in the eighth grade year, which happens a lot because I saved the best for last. So we end up starting the year because I never get to it at the end of the year. And we then later I had planned to, as we were progressing through other blocks, to bring in the symmetry work to review and space out our geometry work that we had done. That didn't happen for many months down, and we are like have braked for April and May, and I still don't have it done. So we will probably pick that up at some point. We have another math block and algebra introduction before the end of the summer, so I'm hoping to pick that up then. Yes, most definitely there are projects that don't get finished or some that we plan that aren't done at all. I definitely, although I love many things about this book, we definitely will not be doing all of it in the way that it's written. So yeah, I agree completely with you, Kim. Each homeschooling is different. Each child is different. And we had talked about, which we didn't get into, how it's really important to bring your own needs, your own experience, your own likes into your homeschooling. Because
it's all about me here. If I love learning, I'm so excited about learning, especially if it's something I don't know anything about. And I love learning all the things about chemistry. And Hannah, I'm on Reddit. Like I'm reading, I'm like, I'm going, why? How? Why? And I'm up late at night and I'm reading all these like comments and stuff. And I'm trying to figure out why. So there aren't a lot of holistic type of curriculum that is explaining in depth and also accessible for the seventh and eighth grader, right? It's either too accessible and not really wow, or it's above and complicated. And so, you know, it's hard to bring it all together. And I think that's the beauty of learning. And so if I can show my children, I love learning. I'm excited about something. They learn that, you know, maybe there's something to be excited about. you know? Does that make sense? And it all has to work for me, because my husband always says, when mommy's happy, everybody's happy. And so if I'm having a good time and if I learn something, I'm like, I feel successful. And because I learned something. And if I'm learning something and I have joy from it, it filters down to the kids, you know? It does. It impacts all of us in a very positive way. So, yeah. So it's all about me.
Thank you so much, both of you, for joining us. I know Hannah has to go. Are there any other last words that you want to say?
Thank you for putting this together, because I don't know of anything like this. And so I really hope that it helps not just the audience, but each other, because we're learning from each other as well. So thank you for putting this together and bringing us together like this.
All right.
Yes, thank you, Della.
All right. Send me those resources and we'll get the replay out to everybody. Thank you guys so much.
I love you.
I love talking to you. Bye-bye.
Take care.